Hi, I'm Govind Jayaraman, and this is Paper Napkin Wisdom. On today's episode, we have Patrick Ellis. Patrick is the president of Blue Note Wines and Spirits, and he's passionate about wine, but he's also passionate about family. As I learned when I spoke with him, there are incredible similarities between his approaches in business and family. I know you're going to love my conversation with Patrick. Let's listen in.
Hey, Pat, welcome to Paper Napkin Wisdom. Thrilled you could join me.
Hey, Gov, good to be here. Good to see you.
Yeah, great to see you. So, hey, you gave me a paper napkin and you filled the napkin, right? You got a full napkin and I'd love you to read it out loud for everyone listening.
Absolutely.
It really speaks to who you are.
Okay. Yeah, I filled the napkin the way I play golf. I try to explore all aspects of the golf course. Okay, well, starting at the top, raising children should be approached as one would grow a vineyard to produce amazing wines. You need to know when to clip back the vines and when to let them flourish. You can only guide. You cannot force the character. Lush green, overly rich settings will make the wine flabby and uninteresting. The vines need to fight through challenging soils and conditions to develop their character.
Well, first of all, for those people who are listening and don't realize it, you're in the wine and liquor distribution business, and there are a few that have a passion for wine like you. So this is interesting, but let me ask you, why did you share that with me? Why was that your message?
My kids, I have three daughters. They're now a little bit older, out of the house. When our children were born, we raised them with the sole intention of really focusing on one singular purpose, and that is to raise these kids to be fully accountable, responsible members of our society. And so almost every decision that we made along the way dovetailed into that. At the same time, and I think it's only accelerated, or maybe my eyes have only gotten bigger, but I'll see on a street corner or in a setting with other parents and their children, interactions where the children are not being encouraged to take that path, and frankly makes me sad, and then leads to frustration. And so when I have an opportunity to talk about it, whether it be at a dinner party or whether it be in a more structured setting, and when you give me a blank paper napkin, I thought, well, this is another opportunity then for me to perhaps add a little bit different perspective.
Yeah, I know, and I love, you know, drawing the simile to a wine. I think it's really obviously very visual and very beautiful the way you've written it, but it's very true when it comes to children, right? They need to have experiences to understand accountability, to understand being impactful, understand what that's all about.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. People that are maybe not familiar with wine will look at some beautiful winery settings and say, wow, that's so amazing. Again, I use words like lush green and, you know, very generous environment. Therefore, the wine must be extraordinary. And those that are in the wine world would look at that and go, actually, no, typically to the converse. We need to have more challenging settings so that the vines have to fight to get to the places where they are. Like some of the iconic wines of the world, like out of Burgundy and what have you, you know, wines that out of the chute, you know, begin at $3,000 a bottle. These wines are grown in non-lush settings, and that is where the real character comes from. So I think that, you know, as people look to, you know, very rich settings and say that equals making a great wine. At the same time, parents, you know, every parent is somewhat inexperienced. We only get really one shot at it, at whether it be single kids or a lot of them. You know, by the time we get it figured out, the game is well done or we're well into it. So I think at the same time, people make the same assumptions. If we really create a really rich, easy environment for them, they will flourish. And I came to the realization, the analogy, because my professional background is, well, as my experience with the kids, no, actually, we really need to keep a sharp eye that we should often point in the other direction.
So let me ask you how that sort of flies in contradiction to a certain degree with how, you know, as an entrepreneur, you drive forward, you want to be successful, you want to, quote unquote, provide for your family and your three daughters. And what does that? So when you're thinking about being successful and having that success and wanting to share that success and the fruits of that success with your daughters, how do you reconcile that conflict?
I think what first we need to do is move away from the generalization of providing for our children and define what that provision is. What is providing for them? And that can take on a number of different shapes. And if we look at that and go, okay, I'm not just providing for the immediate. In other words, if they say they want to have the newest Walkman, I'll get them the newest Walkman. We need to, if we have a vision as to how we want the children to end up by the time that they're 18 years old, what is that child actually going to look like, and how are they going to respond to the outside world? Because by then, regretfully, a lot of kids still remain in their parents' house till, you know, 25, 30 years old, which gets me very excited because I raised my children to be accountable. And one of the rules that they were aware of when they were very young was they are no longer going to be allowed to be in the house after 18 years old. So with that, the kids then begin to, through our coaching, but also on their own, begin to put together a toolbox of skills that they're going to need by the time that they're 18. So they are already negotiating with their part-time job bosses to get that raise. They're learning all sorts of life skills that their competition, these kids that are still living in the basement when they're 25, 28 years old, they're running ratchet over them because the kids are not being put into those situations because they're being provided for. So again, coming back, what sort of provision do we ultimately need to be giving them, and defining that and using that as your singular goal? That being the one thing, the big question.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so let me say again, so your daughters go out, let's say they're out of the home, you know, they're 21 years old, fall into some trouble. What do we do then? Do we let them is your suggestion that we should be letting them live that challenge on their own?
Right, great question. So yeah, when you're raising kids, so much of the hardwiring is done by the time they're about four or five anyways. And then after that, instilling in them the degrees of responsibility as they go from 5 to 10 to 12 to 14, you know, really by the time they're 15 years old, 15 to 16 years old, they may not have the greater wisdom of the outside world. They may not have all the street smarts. But through those years, if they were given the tools to actually work the environments themselves, then they are going to be equipped themselves that when what could be in inexperienced person situation when they're 21, my kids are prepared for it. And of course, I keep knocking on wood with every year that goes by. But today when I was driving, I went by an intersection, and there was a father holding onto his daughter's hand, 6 years old, something like that. And the light turned green, or they approached the intersection, and then the light turned green, and he just grabbed her and walked her through. It's at a moment like that that rather than being efficient for yourself and for you to get to the destination where you're going for, you should be stopping. This is what you would do to train your dog. dog, you would stop at the intersection and say, okay, honey, you tell me when it's good to go. So what you're doing is you're passing the questions on to them in a very safe environment, because while they're still at home, that is the time I want my kids to fail. That is the time I want my kids to be experimenting with different things. It was for that case in point, my kids, when they each turned 10 years old, we sat them down and said, we're going to change you from your $5 a week allowance to $100 a month. Well, 10-year-old kid, man, they got $1,200 windfall there. That's amazing, amazing hit that they get. However, at the same time, we slide in front of them a piece of paper that says, I hereby agree that by receiving $100 a month, I will now no longer ask for anything. So what that means is these kids learn to budget. These kids learn how to shop. These kids learn how to manage different, different things. And they're going to screw up. They're going to run out of money, so on and so forth. Well, we don't articulate this, but the fact is they're still at home. It's not like they're going to be out on the street learning the hard stuff, but for them, this is a very hard lesson to learn. You know, they want to go out to a movie and they just blew their money on a cool pair of jeans. They're learning lessons when they're 11, 12 years old that I'm happy to teach them. And yes, it is painful as a parent, because I would love to be able to just turn around and go, oh, sweetheart, I hate to see you sad. Here, take this $20, take this $50, go and buy the pair of jeans, at the same time, go out and have a good time tonight. It is through those, what are in the bigger scale, picture, really minor pains. And I find quite often parents, when they throw money at the kids, as some parents would call providing for kids, that's a very selfish act. The parent is feeling guilty. So to relieve their guilt, they deny their child the experience to actually have an opportunity to grow.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that what you've just done about everything in the relationship is make it very intentional. Mm-hmm. and thought through, as opposed to being dynamic and random. And shockingly, you brought a plan, right? I mean, you built a plan around it, and it sounds like that's what you did. You guys came together, came up with a plan, mm-hmm. and executed against that plan with the children's best interests in mind. So let's talk about the through the twists and turns. They're now young adults. They're in the world. They're contributing in some way, shape, or form. Are still educating themselves. What's the character of their wine?
Right. Thank you. So again, being 24, 22 and 20, they have all been now out of the house since they were 18. They're all, one is close to graduating. They're all going to UBC. And successfully at that. They are paying for their own room and board through that. So they're figuring out how to manage a success at university while still paying the bills and managing those things. And on top of that, they still lead very rich lives, probably because, again, they've learned a lot of those fundamentals. One thing very interestingly, over the last year and a half, each one of my three children have actually sat me down and specifically thanked me for me and their mom thanked us for choosing this course, because they've said in one way or another, because of the gift of accountability and responsibility now that they've developed, they do see themselves as way ahead of the pack. In other words, their colleagues and friends and what have you, in terms of their maturity.
So yeah, I mean, that's the other side of it, right? It sounds, to some people listening, they'll say, well, that sounds like a harsh way of behaving. And what's their, yeah, sure, it's all very good for you during the time, but do you have a relationship with them now? And I think you just addressed that, right? Yes. And, I know you, Pat, so I know that you're always doing things with your girls.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, it's actually somebody was asking me the other day about the teenage years. And frankly, I if I could do them all over again, I would love to. And that's with three girls. It's a lot of estrogen in the house at any given time for that period. But you know, a lot of it, I mean, it's kind of moving beyond the discussion about about accountability and responsibility. It's really just the relationship between my daughters and I. And yes, that was a very conscious choice where, and I'm not implying that it wasn't without its struggles, but you know, when I look back in the times that my daughter is 14, 15, 16, 18, and still to this day, for them to call me up on a Friday night and say, hey, we're heading out with friends, you know, dad, can you join us kind of thing at the club or, you know, this or that. I think that is a compliment to the relationship that began early on and continued. And so what, you know, what was the essence of that in just a short phrase? It was just straight, open communication, non-judgmental communication, where they would do things that perhaps in a classic father-daughter relationship, the father might spout off some kind of, classic response to something. Sometimes I learned to bite my lip because the immediate battle at hand wasn't nearly as important as the greater war, which is, again, nurturing an open pipeline between us, because that always was, you use the example of when they're 21 and they're in trouble and what have you, that was always first and foremost is I want to be one of their go-to people when they really, really have a real challenge. And that was built by building that trust throughout the time. I'm not just going to throw out wingy cliches and, classic father responses.
Yeah. And that's really hard, right? I mean, you were building a business and being a father and not suggesting that the business was more important, but certainly there are time pressures that were a part of that. And to take the time to be present. Was that something that, you know, what did you do to make sure that you were present when you were having those conversations? So you didn't cliche your way through a problem.
Good question. A lot of the time spent with them was very interactive time. For example, if I was driving the kids to school or across town, we had basic rules. There would be no telephone use or iPods when we're in the car. This is a very golden time for us to be talking about whatever. And so without those distractions or go to things in the car that continually help really make it quality time. And time at home, again, it's just very inclusive. Inclusive activities that meant that we were, you know, we were constantly interacting, and I give it back to them as well, to always being open, and they continue to teach me now and hold me accountable on so many different levels that it's I'm enjoying some tremendous growth even now with them holding my feet to the fire, knowing that it is very much a reciprocal relationship.
That's beautiful. So, just the final piece of pushback is that somebody probably be asking is, you know, given the tight schedules, and you addressed making the quality time, you know, making the time that you had together really quality, and all of that. But do you think that this takes a lot more time than the typical style of parenting, whatever that happens to be?
No, it's actually, it's really not a time equation. It's really about it's about moving the, transferring I find it much more energy consuming to try and micro control. I get exhausted watching a lot of parents trying to control their kids as opposed to, you know, like a lot of relationships. If you give leashes, if you give freedom to that person, and I don't mean carte blanche, classic, California 70s freedom. The parameters are always very well known and very, very clear. But if you give the freedoms, they will tend to actually stay closer to home. Like my kids are, we are at best trying to have dates, if we can, twice a week. And this is while they're out working and going to school and I'm here. And it doesn't always, if we could, we'd probably try and make it three times a week if we could. That's a lot more FaceTime than kids that are 20, living at home spend with a lot of their parents. I'm really generalizing here, but it's very, very different. But again, it's about taking those energies. I got an example for you. My kids, we used to do something, what I used to call the curfew game, where, as they're getting older and, they come back with a classic, well, Bobby gets to stay out till midnight. Why do I have to be home at 10:30 and da, 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 da. So I realized that I don't want to be playing that game for the next 50, the next 5 or 7 years. So I just turned it back to them and said, okay, here are the rules of the game. You present to me what time you think will be the appropriate time. But there is a shotgun to that. And I will respond with an answer. And if your request is so far out there, let's say you want to stay out till 2 o'clock, your current 10:30 curfew is going to become 10 o'clock or 9:30. So I will respond in turn to what your request is. So they come back and they go, actually I'm at 10:30 now. Everybody's staying out till 11:30. I think 11 o'clock is fair. I go, I think that's fair too. Great. We'll hold you to that. And so again, I've relieved all of the decision-making, all of the pushback that can come back on me, all that negotiation has become their baby and they're part of the decision actually. So then the work or the result actually happens.
That's really great. And it's really authentic to you. And I think that's really the other thing. You're wearing a very authentic hat all the way through this and you're consistent, right? So it's leadership. Mm. There's never a day off from leadership. There's never a day off from parenting.
Well said.
And you're being consistent in that execution as a leader.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've really hit one of the core veins of it. Absolutely.
That's wonderful. Well, Pat, thank you for sharing this with me. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. What do you think?
I look forward to it, man.
Thanks.
Great to see you, Gov. Thanks.
What a great conversation and really thought-provoking, because I think that when people think about Patrick's relationships and Patrick's approach as being kind of callous or rough or tough, his relationships with his daughters today, and they're 20, 22, and 24, all in university and paying their own room and board, but enormously close with Patrick, their father. And in the last year, each of them have sat down with him individually to thank him for their upbringing, thank him for their approach. And it's provoking because they say that they are ahead of their peers. They say that they understand things that their peers just don't get, and that puts them at an advantage. Are we giving our children that same kind of advantage? What are we doing? What investment are we making? Are we able to clip back the vine, as he talks about, to produce an amazing wine? I'd love to hear what you think. Please log on to papernapkinwisdom.com. Alternatively, you can follow along at Wise Napkin. Last but not least, don't forget to like our Facebook page. There's lots of extra information there and conversation. My name is Govind Jayaraman. This was Paper Napkin Wisdom. Thanks for listening. Make it a great day.